This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in the space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Jim Behnke bringing you Space Talk with Jim Behnke, the second edition. Welcome back to the show. Our second episode here today from WMMB, and you are invited to join us for the show today by giving us a call at 768-1240. That's 768-1240. 321 is the area code if you're outside Florida's Space Coast. Locally, AT&T wireless customers can call in on Star 1240, and we're happy to have you join us here for another episode of Space Talk. A lot to talk about today. A lot's been going on. If you're brand new to the program, this is the first time you're listening in, let me tell you that Space Talk is, guess what? It's all about the space program. And nothing is really off limits in terms of what we might talk about in terms of space. Space policy, space education, space science, NASA, the military, 45th Space Wing, the Kennedy Space Center, what's going on in space centers around the nation, around the world. Space entertainment, if there's something cool in the movies or on TV or just a neat book you want to talk about, it's all fair game here on Space Talk as we continue to develop this show and move out into the weeks ahead. We certainly invite your questions, comments, and participation here on WMMB. Today we have the Delta IV launch is on tap for 6:14 this evening. We want to give you a quick update on that. The Delta IV rocket carrying a GOES-O satellite, a weather satellite for NOAA, in a launch being handled by NASA, but the rocket by United Launch Alliance. The Delta IV sits at Pad 37, fully fueled for launch tonight at 6:14 in a couple of hours from now. The weather here over Florida's Space Coast continues to be the big question mark, although right now, or at least as of about 5 minutes ago, it was all observed go for the weather. Some couple of serious thunderstorm cells that moved over the Cape area here a little while ago have now moved far enough offshore and cleared the area so that that weather is not a concern right now. So if the conditions continue to present themselves as favorable in about 2 hours or so, we'll see this Delta IV lift off. We will have live coverage of that launch here on WMMB. So keep your fingers crossed there. It has been an extremely busy week, and in fact, as we're putting the notes together for today's show, I want to give a thanks to John Glish at Florida Today for writing an editorial today in the Florida Today that very neatly summarized everything that I wanted to talk about this week. So just looking down the bullets that he mentioned, first of all, out at the Kennedy Space Center, the engineers out there have a good handle on maybe what caused the hydrogen leak that that scrubbed a couple of launch attempts to the space station here during the last couple of weeks. And if that turns out to be the right thing that happened, and it looks like there may have been a hardware misalignment between a panel on the external tank and a panel on the ground support equipment that that feeds this gaseous hydrogen away from the shuttle, during a countdown. If that all works as planned in a test that they're going to do at the Space Center this week, then it looks like they might have a real good shot at July 11th for the next launch attempt for Shuttle Endeavor. So we'll keep our fingers crossed that that test goes well. In Washington, the Senate side of the things have given NASA a full $18.7 billion budget. At least that's what they voted. Unfortunately, the House version is missing about $500 million from their suggestion for what NASA ought to spend next year. And so now the House and the Senate will have to reconcile that. But it's always good to see someone voting for the program instead of against it. So we'll see what develops there. If you remember the Atlas launch a couple of weeks ago, about a week or so ago, launched a pair of satellites, probes for NASA, the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter. The one that's going to orbit the moon did, in fact, arrive at the moon 4 days after launch and is safely in orbit around the moon. It's flight control folks managing that particular mission are going to work now over the next few weeks to refine that orbit and get it back to where it, they can begin taking science. And then the L-Cross part of that spacecraft, the one that's going to actually crash on the moon here in October, also swung by the moon and is out doing its thing. It's going to have a couple of very long, wide, looping orbits before it's finally captured by the moon's gravity and settles in on its collision course. Some very interesting finds at Saturn by NASA's Cassini probe in the moon Enceladus, one of Saturn's moons and one of the most difficult ones to pronounce. But they think they found good evidence of perhaps there being an ocean on the surface or under the surface of the Saturn moon. Europa at Jupiter is also believed to have an ocean, and now we see evidence of it at Saturn. If there's liquid water out there, and this is the important thing, if liquid water is out there in a moon around Saturn or any other body in our solar system, not only is that greatly increased the chance of finding some kind of life, and we're talking bacteria, microbes, little creatures, whatever, that becomes a possibility. But also, as we as humans begin to explore the solar system and move out into the solar system, decades from now, perhaps by the time humans reach Saturn, that liquid water can certainly be used to help, again, get hydrogen out of there for rocket propellant and oxygen for rocket propellant and obviously oxygen to breathe. So that's always a piece of good news, too. A little more interesting note, the Space Shuttle Atlantis came home from its mission to the Hubble Space Telescope, and they found a small knob wedged between basically the instrumentation in the cockpit and one of the windows, and it's in there pretty tight. It's in there so tight, in fact, that so far they've not been able to get it out, and there are some concerns about if they have to actually take some instrumentation out, actually kind of rip apart part of the cockpit to get at it and fix it. That could take some weeks. In fact, some people even say it could take some months. And whether or not that's going to be the case remains to be seen. But they are going to do some tests this week and overpressurize Atlantis, try to basically pop that thing free by ballooning the crew cabin inside. And we certainly hope that that becomes a doable thing and that that problem goes away. Now, the folks at the Kennedy Space Center, these technicians, these engineers, have worked miracles through the history of the shuttle program. And one day it looks gloomy and dark, and the next day it is bright, just like Florida's weather. And perhaps they'll figure this one out, and we'll have no issues in terms of Atlantis's future. So it's been an extremely busy week here along the Cape. It continues to be busy as we track this Delta IV launch this afternoon at 6:14. Again, the weather observed go. And the forecast remains pessimistic, but we'll watch. And the radar right now looking fairly good for the next hour or so anyway. So we'll see what happens as storms move in from the west. So once again, this is Space Talk with Jim Banky, our second edition here from the studios of WMMB. We invite you to call in again at 768-1240. 321-768-1240 is the long distance number. You can follow us during the program also by going to Twitter. Space Talking is the username for Twitter. And if you want to send us email during the program, if you happen to be listening to us live on WMMBAM.com on the streaming web, you can send us some email at spacetalking@AOL.com. So once again, we're fully live to Brevard County, the Space Coast, and in fact, the entire nation. So we hope that you will become a part of this program and join in, ask some questions, let us know what you want to talk about. And when we come back from our first break here in just moments away, the director of the Kennedy Space Center, Robert Cabana, four-time shuttle astronaut and now the current chief of NASA's Space Center here, the Rocket Ranch on the Space Coast, will be our guest, and we'll talk about what's going on more in detail at the Kennedy Space Center. So for now, this is Jim Banky with Space Talk. We'll be back right after these words.
Listen to Space Talk on the web at WMMBAM.com. Now, back to our own mission specialist, Jim Banky.
Good afternoon, everybody. Jim Banky here with Space Talk on WMMB. Again, join us at 768-1240 or star 1240 on your AT&T Singular Wireless Service. Listen to us live, streaming on the web right now at WMMBAM.com. And you can listen in from anywhere that the internet reaches you. And you can reach us anywhere on the internet as well. So we invite you to participate and welcome back again to this edition of Space Talk with Jim Behnke as we continue to track the countdown to launch of a Delta IV this afternoon at 6:14 from Complex 37 at Cape Canaveral Air Force Station. A launch of a NASA and NOAA GOES-0 satellite, weather satellite that's so critical for us here in Florida for monitoring hurricanes. NASA managing the launch, NOAA spacecraft, and a mission getting put together by the United Launch Alliance folks. So stay tuned for that coverage after Space Talk as we pick up the count and listen in at 6:14. Well, my guest today for Space Talk, I'm so pleased to have him with us. Because of the launch, in fact, I should tell you that he is out at the Kennedy Space Center right now and will join us from a studio out at the press site. And Bob Cabana, the KSC director, is our guest. Bob took over as the director of the Kennedy Space Center, I believe director number 10, last fall in 2008. He was a four-time shuttle astronaut, including commanding the first assembly mission of the International Space Station back when it was just this tiny little thing, where they put Node 1 together with the Russian module called Zarya, a huge milestone for us in 1998. We all were looking on the ground at the astronauts talking about how much room they had up there to float around and do all these neat things in this incredible facility that was really only two modules. And now you look at the space station 10, 11 years later, and you can't even hardly pick out Node 1 and Zarya because this thing's so huge. And so we're excited to have him aboard. By the way, Bob is a Minnesota native, as am I, and you can be sure that before he goes away from this this discussion we're about to have, we're going to ask him about the Minnesota Vikings and whether or not Brett Favre is going to play for the Vikings. In his opinion, is that a good idea? And does that have to do with space? Yes, because when I watch the Vikings at home on TV, I'm using my direct satellite television, the signal beaming directly to my roof from 22,300 miles straight up. So with that, let's welcome Bob Cabana, the Kennedy Space Center Director, to Space Talk with Jim Behnke. Mr. Cabana, how are you today?
Just great, Jim. It's great to be with you.
Good. Good. So, hey, tell us, first of all, you're out at the press site, and you're monitoring the launch for this Delta IV, the countdown. What's your gut tell you about what's going to happen here in the next couple of hours?
I think we got a shot at it. We'll see. The weather right now looks good. Depends on how the storms develop in the area, and you know how that goes around here. But so far, everything's tracking well, and about an hour and 45 minutes from now, we ought to know whether we're going to get it off or not.
Good, good. Well, we'll certainly keep an eye on that with you. Now, you know, it has been an incredibly busy time. You guys are just absolutely rocking and rolling on all sorts of shuttles. We've talked about the hydrogen issue with Endeavour. Can you again give us from your perspective a quick update on how you think that troubleshooting is going? What kind of your plans are for this week?
Sure, you bet. The team they worked through the weekend. I think we're in a good spot now. We understand the problem. Even though the tank was within specifications, it was at the far side of it, in where this ground umbilical interface is, and it was clocked just slightly off so that when we mated, there was a little bit of pressure, if you will, on one side that allowed at cryogenic temperatures for a small leak to develop.
Mm-hmm.
We understand it now. We've got it clocked on there correctly. We're using a different seal, and we've gone to a two-part versus a one-part seal that the engineers feel much more confident about. So we'll do a tanking test. I'll finish up the work this weekend. We'll go into a count on Monday for tanking, get a tanking test out of the way on Wednesday. And actually, some of the engineers I talked to were confident enough that they said we could just go launch. But we'll make sure this time that we've got the leak fixed. And I'm very confident that July 11th, you know, weather permitting, we'll be able to get the shuttle on its way to the space station on STS-127.
Good. Your engineers want to go ahead and launch it, but I don't think you'd have a crew on board at that point, would you?
No, they're back in Houston, but those guys are all ready. That's a great crew, veteran group that's ready to go.
Yeah, that's good. It makes for a good mission to have a crew on board. Hey, on the shuttle itself, now I know that after the last couple scrubs happened, I think even I was guilty of it, we were all talking about this being an issue with ground support equipment. And then again, hinting that maybe the age of the equipment up there was an issue. Am I understanding correctly that, this clock issue, this misalignment, may actually be in the plate that's installed on the external tank, and it wasn't quite fitting up?
Yep, that's correct. It's where the ground umbilical interfaces with the external tank, and that's where we think the problem is. And we can modify the plates where we hook everything together and make it work. And of the tanks that we have left to fly, this one was probably on the far side the worst. So I think we'll get through this one. We understand the problem now, and it shouldn't be an issue in the future.
Now moving over to Shuttle Atlantis, and of course, Bob, you've been up there four times. You've flown. You know what it's like in zero gravity and how things move on their own and get lost in the strangest places. This is certainly a weird one, isn't it? This knob that folded into the pane?
It's amazing what can happen in zero-G, how things move around. We had one guy that lost his watch, and I think it was two flights later somebody found it. They looked all over for it during the flow and couldn't find it. But you mentioned it earlier. You know, whenever it comes to finding a solution to the problem, my money's on the KSC technicians. This is the finest group of folks anywhere. They know this vehicle inside and out, and if they can figure out a way to get this fixed in the most expeditious way and do it right, they're going to do it. So I'm confident we're going to figure it out, and we'll get Atlantis going on time.
Well, we talk about KSC crews being miracle workers, like a certain engineer from a certain TV show. We've seen that demonstrated time and again. I'll just continue to talk about that because I remember a time when I think there was an engine. This goes back, obviously, quite a few years, but I remember there was a time when I think there was an engine issue. Maybe there was an abort on the pad, and they were going to have to swap out an engine, and oh, my gosh, the shuttle was standing up in the vertical, and it just can't be done. They're going to have to roll back and take it off and delay this thing several months, and the guys got together and said, are you crazy? Here's how we'll do it. And they swapped it out at the pad, and it became standard operating procedure after that. These guys know their stuff, don't they?
They really do. I was over in the OPF a couple of weeks ago where they're working on Discovery. And, you know, it is going to be a hard time here at the Kennedy Space Center a couple of years from now when we finally fly that that last shuttle mission. And unfortunately, a lot of really talented folks are going to be out of work, and we're doing our best to help alleviate that problem, mitigate it as best we can through a number of initiatives. But, you know, they are not distracted about the future. They are focused on the job at hand, and that is the safe processing of our vehicles. I've never seen a more focused, dedicated workforce, and I have absolutely no concern about them doing the job right. The last mission, when we fly it, is going to be as safer than any other mission that we've flown.
I got to agree with that. I mean, certainly I count among my friends some folks that work out there, and they're not going to do anything that's going to be quick and get in the way of having any issues come up. I remember the same stories being told about the guys that worked Apollo 17 back in 1972. It was their last launch, their last night, and literally the next morning had to turn in their badges. And I know that the crew will be good to the very end, and I know that the United Space Alliance and other contractors are doing a lot that they can to keep the crews motivated, to keep them interested, and to retain them to the end as well, as I understand, because obviously if you're worried about your career and your family, you might want to jump early and take another opportunity, but I know that some of these guys are taking a risk, if you will, and putting it out there to make sure this program ends on a high note, and I think that's very admirable.
Well, if you go over and talk to them, they treat that vehicle like it is a member of the family, and the crew that works on it is a family. It's not a vocation to these folks. It's an avocation. They just they're totally dedicated to it. And, you know, right at the end of that last flight, you know, there's not going to be a huge exodus. We still have to have the workforce available to save all the vehicles and prepare mm-hmm. them for storage or shipment to museums. So there will be a general drawdown after that last mission.
And I know you're working, as I am in my own way, to make sure we keep one of those orbiters here. Now, as the director, are you going to sign something, a piece of paper for us, and resolve that issue once and for all?
Well, you know, I joked the other day. I figure having possession of it is, you know, that's pretty good. It's kind of hard to take it away from us.
Come and get it from us if you want it, right? I can see the 100 people.
You know, we'll see. And I have to bow to the wishes of NASA headquarters, of course, but yeah. I think it would really be appropriate for one of the orbiters to stay here at the Kennedy Space Center along with our Saturn V rocket. This is where it first flew, where it last flew, and you know, I tell my folks, all the other centers are very important, and they all do great things, but none of them could do any of the great things they do if we didn't do our job well here. This is where the processing happens. This is where we launch humans and payloads to space and recover them safely, and nothing else happens unless we do it right here. So that's pretty neat. We ought to have an orbiter here to remember that, Bob.
I absolutely agree. We're about to take a break here, Bob. When we come back, we'll continue talking with the director of the Kennedy Space Center, Robert Cabana. We'll ask him about the shuttle schedule and whether or not we'll keep flying past 2010 or not. What does he think? What's the current plan? With a lot more to come from Space Talk with Jim Behnke here on WMMB, please give us a call, 768-1240, or star 1240 on your ATT wireless. We'll be back after a couple of minutes break here at the bottom of the hour. Again, Space Talk with Jim Behnke here on WMMB.
With everything you need to know about America's space program, here is Jim Behnke.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's Saturday afternoon here on Florida's Space Coast. Again, we're watching for the countdown and launch of a Delta IV this afternoon from the Cape here on pad 37 out of Cape Canaveral Air Force Station. It looks so far like the launch is going well. The rocket is fully fueled. No technical problems reported. The weather is observed go right now. We continue to watch some weather floating around on the radar screens here. But right now, looking pretty good, looking like there might actually be a shot at it here at 6:14 with the launch window extending 1 hour to 7:14. Again, this is Space Talk with Jim Behnke on WMMB. We invite you to call in at 768-1240 if you'd like to participate in the program and ask a question, make a comment. Star 1240 on the AT&T wireless customers. 321 is our area code if you're listening in on the streaming audio on WMMBAM.com. And so plenty of ways to get a hold of us here and be a part of this program. With us is the Kennedy Space Center Director, Bob Cabana, who will join us here for another segment here. And Bob, let's get right to it. You are a Minnesota native, as am I. Graduate of Washburn High School. Many times I've driven by that place. I had the privilege and pleasure of interviewing your parents when they were down here for one of your launches back when I was with Florida Today. And I understand they're both doing very well and are healthy. Is that true?
That is true, although they're finally going to move from Minnesota, I think.
Oh,
after
no.
After 84 years, yep.
Don't tell me they're going to Arizona.
No, they're actually moving out with my brother in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Oh, that's not bad. That's bad. It seems like Minnesota's
not too bad.
Either go to Arizona or Florida, and then the trend has been Arizona lately. But Utah is nice. That's cool. So the big question, Bob, I know that you're a Minnesota Viking fan. Your time in Houston did not spoil you. You didn't become a Dallas Cowboy fan. The Texans is maybe a little flash in the pan before you got out. Tell me what you think about Brett Favre possibly playing for the Vikings this fall.
Well, I tell you, he is a phenomenal quarterback, and what I like about him is he never gives up, and the enthusiasm that he brings to the game. And I think that's everybody needs to have that enthusiasm for what they do. I know we got it here at KSC, and so I'm kind of hoping things work out and he gets to play a season with the Vikings because I think he'd be fun to watch. It'd be fun to see him get even with those Green Bay Packers.
Purple jerseys with number 4 on for everybody. So we'll have our satellite tune in for that this fall and hope that that happens. So talking about the Kennedy Space Center and talking about the Space Shuttle program, Bob, now we were talking about the last flights are about to happen. I think there are 8 more here now on the books right now. The official plan remains to retire the shuttle program by September 30th of next year. Is that still the plan? Are you holding out hope for something later? How are you dealing with that right now?
Yeah, right now, and the budget doesn't support anything else, Jim. We are on track to fly out the shuttle, the 8 remaining missions, by September 30th of 2010. Now, if we run into a technical issue and have delays like we have here with 127, you know, we can slip that out a little bit. We don't have a hard deadline anymore. We've been mandated to fly the remaining 8 flights, and if we go into 2011, that's okay. Right now, unfortunately, we have not been funded to fly those missions should they slip into 2011. So we're looking at, you know, being as frugal as we can to roll through any money to make that happen. But the key here is that there's not an artificial end date that is going to force folks to make bad decisions or something trying to make it. We'll end the shuttle when the 8 missions are up.
It's kind of
I don't think it's going to go longer. The budget doesn't support it, and I haven't heard anything that says that's going to change. Now, the Augustine panel is reviewing where NASA's going, and they're supposed to report out here the end of August. It's a very open, honest review. They're taking comments from everyone. They're looking at all options, and they have been tasked to provide 2 options of what we should do within the budget and 1 or 2 options if we were going to go outside the budget and get a little more money. So I think at the end of the summer, they will have evaluated everything, what we're doing, where we're going, provide those options to the administration, and then we'll get clear direction on where they would like us to head. One of the things that I tell all the folks here at KSC is that, yes, this is a very challenging time, and it's difficult as we transition the shuttle and move it into retirement and move on to a new vehicle. But the bottom line is I think we have a very bright future here at KSC because this is where NASA and the United States process payloads and launch humans and payloads to space and recover them. And we are going to have a NASA. We are going to have a space program. So whether it's the shuttle or some other vehicle, even if it's not the Ares 1 and Ares 5, whatever we're directed to do, we will have a space program where we operate out of here, out of KSC, launching out of away from Earth. So I think that's good. And I know this team, they just want to be tell us what you want done, give us the resources to do it, and we'll get it done.
I know that we talked about the Senate passing a full budget for next year. The House held back $500 million, and I think they were making a statement that said, you know, we want to see what this Augustine panel comes up with first before we give you the money, you know, and that's sort of a political thing. But it made me think in terms of an operational thing. You're not doing anything at the Kennedy Space Center to hold back, are you, on Ares 1 and in terms of modifying launch pads, ground support equipment, the Ares 1X launch, is that still on for this summer? How are you dealing with that?
Absolutely, Jim. We have been directed to execute the program that we've been given. And we were told during the Augustine panel's deliberations, don't do anything different. Continue on the track that you're on until you're directed to do something else. So the team is working very hard because we want to make that date in 2015 to have the new vehicle ready to go. We have modified Pad 39B for Ares 1. We are modifying it for Ares 1X. Through a great partnership with the state of Florida, we have totally refurbished the ONC high bay for processing the Orion spacecraft, and that is ready to go. All we need is the hardware in there to start that work. Over in VAB right now, we are stacking up the Ares 1X vehicle. This is a test flight. It's going to look like the Ares rocket, although the upper stage is made out of steel, and it's a dummy upper stage. Segments were made at the Glenn Research Center up in Ohio and at the Langley Research Center in Virginia. They've been shipped down here. We're stacking the solid rocket motor. Although it will be a 5-segment motor, only 4 segments will have propellant in it. But it's a test flight to get the aerodynamic characteristics, learn more about this single-stick approach that we're taking with a first-stage solid rocket motor. And actually, the first 5-segment solid rocket motor firing is scheduled for August this year out in Utah in Ogden. The test flight right now, the team is still working toward the end of August, but to be honest, I really don't think we're going to make that. I think we got a shot making September, but you know, we're doing the right thing, processing it, getting it stacked up. I want to see it stacked in the VAB so we can start the integrated testing, and I think we'll learn a lot when we do that, as we learned with the space station. Mm-hmm. When I look at where we are right now, you know, you mentioned the space station earlier and what Node 1 and Zarya looked like and where it is today. You know, 10 years ago, the space station was still just Node 1 and Zarya. And then at the end of 2000, we docked the service module so we could get a crew up there. In 10 years, that vehicle it's a phenomenal facility up there now. We have 6 human beings on board from each of the international partners, and we're finally in a point where we can actually do science on it. I mean, we needed pretty much 3 people just to maintain the space station as it was. Now with 6 people on board, we can have 3.5 people dedicated to actually full-time science on board the space station. And back 10 years ago, 12 years ago, if you look at what space station was up against, I mean, it won by one vote in the House. People were saying it was too costly, over budget. Technically, you couldn't do it. It was the wrong answer. We're not going to be able to do this. And we did it. And the Constellation program, you know, it's today for them. 10 years ago for the space station, it's all the same story. Mm-hmm. And I know 10 years from now, we are going to have a program. And again, whether it's Ares 1 and Ares 5, I mean, we will have something. And we're going to be ready to go back to the moon. A lot can happen in 10 years. And I'm very confident that the things are going to end up turning out okay here.
And I think I am too. You know, the Ares 1X, some people have, you know, said it's not enough of the real thing to retire any of the risk or whatnot. But my understanding is there is some technical things you're going to learn from that. And we've only got about a minute here with you, Bob. Tell me real quick what you think you might learn from flying that Ares 1X, that brand new vehicle this year.
Well, for one thing, we're going to see how it handles. It's got all the mass, and it's a single-stage solid rocket motor, first stage, 4-segment, not 5. That'll be a little different, of course, but it's kind of like a big wind tunnel model, and it's fully instrumented throughout. So I think the data that we learn on how it handles, how it behaves, how it flies is going to be critical. The aerodynamic characteristics, the a recovery system for the 5-segment solid rocket motor is as it will be on the real vehicle. So there's a lot that we can learn, and just flying it is going to be good.
Good, good. Well, Bob, thanks for being with us today, and good luck this afternoon with the launch of the Delta IV and with everything going on at the Space Center here next week and these coming months. And we'll be sure to talk to you and some of your colleagues to keep everyone up to date with what's going on. So thanks for being here today.
My pleasure, Jim. Look forward to talking to you again.
Good, thanks. Hey, this is Jim Banky with Space Talk on WMMB Radio. We're going to take a short break, be back with some old business, some new business, and perhaps your phone calls on 768-1240. We'll be right back.
If it's happening in space, Jim Banky is there. Okay, well, not in space, but he's all about it. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
Jim Banky here. You are so right. We're all about space here on WMMB. Again, inviting your call, 768-1240, star 1240, AT&T Wireless. Follow us live online at WMMBAM.com. Not only follow us in Space Talk, but everybody else that's going on here in this station. Bill Mick in the morning, all his shows podcast, my show certainly podcast. Lots to deal with here locally, all on WMMBAM.com. And real quick, we're going to go to Ernie in Merritt Island, who appears to have a question about the space station.
Yeah, Jim, thanks. I enjoy your program.
Good, thanks.
My question is I'm a real fan of the space program and also the International Space Station, and I enjoyed getting up in the morning and watch it fly overhead here in Brevard, but I can't find a source that will give me information on when we can have a sighting here in Brevard. Do you have any information that
absolutely.
A website or some other source?
Ernie, sure, I can tell you. The best way to get to it right now is the usual www.spaceflight.nasa.gov. Takes you to their main spaceflight page, and then there's like a real-time data tab, and then you drop it down, you see live space station tracking, And there's actually then a page, and I think the best thing to do is we'll get Bill to post this on the WMMB website as well at some point. But
great,
you can actually go to a page where NASA regularly updates all of the possible sightings from cities and states around the world. So you actually drill down. You pick United States, you pick Florida, then you pick – you can pick Melbourne. You can actually pick Cape Canaveral. You can pick Kennedy Space Center. They're all generally the same, although it's kind of interesting. Sometimes they're off by just a few seconds.
Sure.
Depending on where you're at. But, yeah, go to that site. And when there are opportunities during the next couple of weeks, they'll post it there, and you can follow it. And you can watch them either in the, right away in the morning or in the evening, or, of course, my favorites because I don't like getting up early. But they're there. And not only is it neat to watch the space station fly overhead if you've never seen that happen, but, again, we talked about the shuttle program ending. It's really neat to see the space shuttle and the space station at the same time when they're approaching each other or right after they've undocked when that opportunity happens. And you see these two stars moving just across the sky, moving at 5 miles a second, knowing that in one of them little stars you've got seven guys, and in another one of those little stars you've got six guys, and it's moving that fast and it's that bright and that obvious, and it's just a really neat thing. So, Ernie, thanks for your call.
I enjoyed very much when they went from the three solar panels to the fourth one. It just added the brightness of it. And it's just a beautiful sight if no one's seen it. It's
yeah,
really spectacular.
With each solar panel, it got really – and, of course, it's as bright as it's going to be now. It's really neat. So, anyway, thanks, Ernie. We'll try to post that on the website, and I'll remember next week to bring you the exact website address so that you can drill right down to Space Coast and find out what's going on. So thank you for that. Mike in West Melbourne, a comment on the Apollo program, sir.
Oh, hi, Jim. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi. I just wanted a couple comments. I wanted to first thank you for your show. I'm glad that we have a show like this available to us now, and I'm enjoying it. And I wanted to thank WMMB for letting you do the show.
Good.
And I got nothing technical here. I just wanted to relay a little story. I've lived here pretty much my whole life, and I've always been a fan of space, and I can remember as a little kid, 6, 7 years old, and my dad used to work with the Apollo program, and in my neighborhood out there in Merritt Island, everybody that lived there worked, you know, at the Space Center there, and I can remember on the launches, we would, with my parents, our neighborhood, we would all climb up there on the roof of our house, and with our little black and white TV with the rabbit ears and an extension cord, we put the TV up there on the roof, and you know, we would just sit up there and watch that rocket launch, and I was just fascinated, and I still am with the space program because of that. And you could look across the neighborhood and see your other friends and everybody on the roofs of their house.
It became a really community event, didn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a big thing then, and I know it's a big thing now, but, you know, then it was brand new, and just I dreamt of going to space ever since then, and I appreciate all the launches and all the people that you know, do their thing, and I just wanted to relay that story.
All right, thanks. Thanks, Mike. Keep listening, and we'll look forward to your calls in the future. Appreciate it. You know, what Mike's talking about reminds me that in terms of some kind of some old business, last week we invited your questions and comments as well, and I got a couple of questions from my friend Keith Cowing at NASA Watch. So we were talking about my background and the fact that when I was growing up in Minnesota, I used to watch, Apollo moonwalks on one channel and Star Trek reruns on the other, and Mike just now calling and talking about his memories. You know, Keith asked the question, did you ever have the Gemini flu where you got sick every 2 months and had to stay home from school like he did so that he could watch as the Gemini missions were launched? Well, Keith's just a little bit older than I am, so I don't remember the Gemini launches too much, but I sure do remember the Apollo launches. And in fact, I remember one particular splashdown of a Skylab mission where I was in school, and I actually had to ask the teacher, I said, you know, can I go to the laboratory and get the hall pass? And we were in this big circular school, and the bathroom was just to your left, but the media center was halfway around the circle to your right. And I just happened to turn right instead of left and went all the way around and happened to look at the only TV in the school that was turned on to the splashdown and watched that coverage and then made my way to the bathroom and then finally back to the class. And that teacher, she was not happy with me that it took so long to make that trip. So, hey, the other question Keith asked me was, do you still use your Star Trek phaser remote control for your TV? And I think I did used to have one, but it has long since been retired. And A couple of quick comments about last week. Again, a correction. Linda Brandt called in or sent in an email offering well wishes to the program, and I really appreciated that. And I thanked her and said that she was the president of the Space Coast EDC. It turns out, as I realized right afterwards, that there are two Lindas in my life, and Linda Brandt is one of them. And she is the owner and operator and genius behind Brandt Ronit, incredible agency for creative talent, advertising, marketing, strategic communications. The other Linda is, of course, Linda Weatherman, who is the actual president of Space Coast EDC. So wanted to make sure that I said that for the record, that I was wrong, and make sure that I made that correction. So in the last little bit that we've got left, I just want to make sure that you remind everyone that we do have this launch tonight of the Delta IV coming up at 6:14 this afternoon, another hour or so. Technically, everything continues to go well with the launch countdown. The weather right now is go. Continue to look at clouds in the sky, but the fingers are crossed that we might really have an opportunity here to get this off the ground. So we'll be back with coverage in an hour. Next week, a pre-recorded show with U.S. Representative Bill Posey. We're recording at 9:30 a.m. this Wednesday if you want to call in. We'll put some reminders out there on Twitter and out online. Thank you all for listening to today's program. Thanks to Bob Cabana, the director of the Kennedy Space Center, for being a part of all this. And we look forward to talking to you, talking to Bill Posey next week, and to do some Apollo anniversary stuff in the weeks to come. So this is Space Talk with Jim Behnke on WMMB. Thanks for being here today. Well, again, we'll talk to you very soon. Keep your fingers crossed for this Delta IV launch. We'll be on the air again in about an hour.